Live and direct.
It's Alzheimer's, What They Forget to Tell You, episode 44.
Get on cat. Hi, guys. Welcome back. Well, I should say welcome back. You should say welcome back.
Oh, welcome back.
Oh. I don't know if you guys missed me. Because, you know, nothing's been said.
Like what? What do you want? Oh, like a welcoming committee?
No, just
like
you were missed.
You were missed. You're missed. Oh my god.
Okay. Can you feel the love? I should start playing that Elton John song from Lion King. Can you feel the love?
I'm pretty sure it doesn't sound like that. I'm positive it doesn't sound like that.
Hi. Welcome. Thanks for joining. Who's this?
Karen.
So maybe we should introduce what's happening first before that happens.
Okay. Hello. Hi. Oh, let me see if I can push you closer.
Hi.
So why don't you let everybody know what's happening first before...
Well, no, Karen's going to tell... Karen can say what's happening.
Okay, so for our episode 44, you guys, we have decided that Karen will be back. Karen's friend, Karen.
Karen with a K, who spells it wrong.
Who was on a couple of weeks ago, is back to talk about another experience that has happened with her journey and her mom's journey. So that's going to be on this episode tonight, just in case you guys did not know. We're just filling you in. She just called and is on the phone, so hit it.
Hey. Hi, everybody. So just to kind of recap, my mom was diagnosed as an early onsetter in, I believe it was 2013 in October. And like Karen's mom, she was a nurse in Brampton. And, you know, the disease is progressing. For a while, she's been diagnosed as severely impaired cognitively. My mom is 73. She probably looks 65 physically. She is in great physical health, but obviously her mind and her memory are failing her. And because she's very young in her spirit and she has her social graces, often people do not believe that she is cognitively severely impaired, but she is. And hence she qualifies for long-term care because she has no ability to keep herself safe,
okay,
take care of herself, or cook
a question,
for herself.
Question. How long was she on the waiting list?
So she was on the waiting list for about a year and a half, I think, at the most 2 years.
So for people who don't know, there is a year or a year and a half waiting list for a person. Your loved one, if you would like to put them in a long-term care facility. So it's not instant.
Right. And so, you know, we kind of felt like we were putting her on the list early. But, you know, this is a disease where you never know when the change is going to come. And there's no way of predicting what the change will be. So after my dad had a health crisis, we just thought, you know what, we need to just put her on the list. So we did. And we did get a call for a placement, but it was about 3 weeks ago, but it was a semi, so a shared room, but we declined it because we know that my mom would do much better in a private room. And my dad, her spouse, is the kind of gentleman who will spend his entire day in her room, wherever she is. And so just knowing how they are as a couple, a private room kind of suits our family.
Right.
So we turned it down, and we removed Semi off of the list, and under the impression that we probably wouldn't hear from them for a year or so. 3 weeks later, on the weekend, we get the call on Friday that there is a private room in Brampton that has come up. Now, when we did the application, we were somewhat discouraged from putting down only semi-private and private, because we're told that privates rarely come up because obviously there's a higher cost associated with it.
And how much is that?
It's about $2,500 or $2,600 a month. And so most people's pensions don't cover it. They cover a shared room. And so as a family member, you have to supplement that because it's not what's covered under the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care.
So you have to supplement the $2,600 or it is $2,600?
I think it's $2,600. So based on her pension, it's less than that. So we would have to pay the difference.
Okay.
Right? Because it's based on your pension. So I think Karen talked about this before. So whatever your pension is, you turn it over and you are the patient or resident of the care facility receives a very menial personal needs type of allowance of about $150 a month. So they take everything.
Right.
And that's what you're left with. So if you're in a private room, and you would have to just pay the difference.
Okay.
So we got the call on Friday. My dad was, you know, not expecting it. We were feeling like she's not there yet. He is having a really hard time, and we are on a, or my dad, I should say, is on a list for some respite support. But, you know, we haven't received a call about that as yet. So we got the call. They said it's a private room. It's not too far from where they live, and it had a bathroom.
And how long has he been, I'm just going to be asking questions, but how long has he been on this respite list?
I think almost a year, I would say.
So for people, I just want, if you're paying attention, so think about the fact that you have a loved one. Obviously, let's just say it's your parents, so, okay, they're together. And now your mom falls sick and requires, of course, help immediately because that's the diagnosis. And now your father's trying to do as much as he can. And he's dealing with his own loss because, you know, it's emotional. And on top of that, he's now asking for supports from, because Ministry of Health, you're eligible for some supports. And now you have to wait a year to a year and a half to access these supports.
Right. And so in between that time, their suggestion is going to a day program. And we tried that twice. The first time we tried it a year ago or 2 years ago at the Alzheimer's Society, and they kind of have 2 day programs. They have one for folks who are further along in the illness, and most of which are a lot were nonverbal and using walking aids or in wheelchairs. And then they have another room where folks' affect was very flat. Some were verbal, but it was very different. And my mom physically kind of looked like she belonged with a second group, but she's still alert enough to know that she is not presenting as ill as those folks are. So what would she do in this space surrounded by folks who are physically maybe able but don't really communicate?
Right.
So she was, you know, traumatized, as was my father, because she was refusing to go there. So several months ago, and I think I talked about it on the show, where we got a call for another day program, and this one is in a long-term care facility, walking distance from my parents' home, and it did not go over very well. When I got there a little bit late. My mom was trying to get out of the facility. My dad was kind of holding on to her. She was very agitated. She was saying, you know, she's 30 years old. Why would she need to be in a place like this? And she didn't even stick around for the tour. Now, I went for the tour, and once again, a lot of the residents were advanced in their disease and advanced in their age. And so my mom mom just looked like she could have been working there, to be honest, right. Or volunteering there.
Right.
And the administrator pulled me aside and said, which I found so alarming, said that they couldn't handle her here. She would need to be on meds, which means because she is strong, because she is young, and she has no health, physical health issues, she can try and get out of there. And they are just not equipped, which I don't understand because it's healthcare, to deal with a young person with dementia. And so she was pretty much telling me that they would not take my mom unless she was on some, some really strong medications that altered her personality, let's say. So not a great solution.
So like trazodone or something.
Right. So dope her up so she's no longer herself. Mm-hmm. When we're trying to hold on to the woman that she is, mm-hmm. so my dad can get a break. Right? So yeah. She's already losing her mind, and now we want her to lose her essence so you can watch her day program so my dad can get a break, mm-hmm. and be able to breathe and not worry that she's going to go missing. So moving on to the tour. So my dad and I went for a tour this week. I was kind of excited because they said it was a private room with a bathroom. So we, the lobby, it was a facility that was built in 2003. So, it looked pretty nice. It was a secured facility in independent living and supportive living environments. So there were folks with varying abilities, and some were just, that's where they lived. So we went to the secure floor, and there was programming taking place with their activationists. Everyone seemed to be about 85 years old, in chairs, and that's what we saw. We saw one lady who presented like my mom, obviously further along in her illness, and she was wandering, and she was the only person who looked to be in my mom's age group. So, that just, my dad was like, this can't work. So then we went into the room, and it was small, and I looked at the bathroom, and I said, there's no shower. And she said, well, no, the shower's down the hall. And my dad said, well, my wife, she takes care of her shower, and she likes to shower, and she does every morning. And the lady said, which I knew, but I just hoped, when they told me it had a bathroom, that it would have a shower.
So it's just like a powder room.
Again, they told us the policy, the ministry standard, is you shower twice a week when you're in long-term care. And it's assisted showering. So because my mom can shower on her own, they would have to unlock the door to the shower, and somebody would have to stand behind the shower curtain while she's having a shower. And they would only let her do that twice a week. So my dad asked, well, what if she wants to shower every day? And they said no, because of their staffing and for safety reasons. And they said the only way that she could shower every day is if myself or my dad came every day and asked them to let us in the shower and stood on the other side of the curtain. And
how hygienic can that be if people are only taking showers twice a week?
Because the reality is, it's not going to harm your health if you don't shower, right? Like,
that's, according to who?
But what if you're incontinent?
Well, then they will wipe up the areas that need to be wiped up. And if you require a full shower, but if you don't, they spot and clean. That's how it's done. Spot cleaning, right? Lower half. That's the ministry standard. That is it. But here is the irony. So that is all that you will get in a ministry of care facility. Now they have these lovely memory care facilities, and they cost anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000 a month.
And which still can only take two showers a week.
No.
There you have a shower in your room.
Yeah.
dare you have a shower in your room? So now my dad and I are thinking, because, you know, I almost lost him because of the stress last year, and now he's having a complication from his surgery, and the stress is too much for him. But he does not want to, nor do I, my mom, to go into one of those places, because it will literally kill her. It will kill her spirit. And that's all she has left at this point, right?
Yeah.
So we're considering putting her in a memory care facility. And there's one in Brampton. And it costs maybe about $5,500 a month for the two of them. And they actually have in their memory care unit, they have a suite where they can get two bedrooms. And
where's this memory care facility?
So a memory care facility is just an expensive secured facility in a retirement home.
Okay, and where is this one located? I didn't even know they had one.
It's called Amica, and it's near Shoppers World in Brampton, so a highway 10 here in Ontario and Charlotte.
Yeah, I watched that being built the past few years. Yeah.
So it just opened up April of this year. And there's quite a few all over, you know, in most places. There's a nice one in Oakville and Streetsville and whatever. Like, there's even, like, you know, Hazelton Lanes has one.
So basically, what you're saying is,
if you have money, you're good.
If you develop this, yeah, well.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And lots of it.
And, yeah, lots of it. You're okay. You'll be okay. But other than that,
you're out of luck.
Grim?
Yeah. So my dad, you know, I told him to consider, you know, move it, because so you have a memory care floor and then you have independent living. And so it's like living in a hotel suite. And the amenities are equivalent to a hotel. Everything's a la carte, it's chef, it's like, it's very nice. And so I suggested
It better be for $5,500.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it is nice. You can't compare it to a long-term care facility. You can't. Like, some suites are 900 square feet. They have showers. They're beautiful. Everything snacks. It's food all day long. There's programming. There's some extra services you can pay for. Like, you know, they have a hair salon and they'll have a bar and stuff like that. So my dad is considering moving into one with my mom. For a year or so, just, you know, because we know things are going to keep progressing and getting worse for her. But then at least they can be together.
And it makes the transition easier.
Right. So he can sign her out of the floor and they can spend their time in the a la carte areas for the independent living couples and singles. And they can spend their whole day down there. And then it's just when they go back up to their suite, she won't know the passcode, nor would she remember it. And then if he, let's say in the morning, has to run out to the bank, he knows that she can't leave the floor. She can't leave the facility. But we're talking like almost $6,000 a month for a year or two.
That's a lot of money.
So, you know, my parents' home is quite large and has a lot of stairs. And, you know, we know that stairs and walking and gait issues happen for folks with Alzheimer's. And so, you know, they need to be in a bungalow. And it's been suggested that to move her to another home, like a regular home, would be so traumatic for her that it would be problematic. She would probably, because she exit seeks, there would be a lot more of that happening. But if, you know, we consider one of these memory care facilities, at least she'll be there with her spouse. And
okay, then what happens to your dad after the 2 years, let's say?
Well, I mean, he's welcome to live with me, and that's always been the plan. But so it's just, you know, at some point in her illness, she's not going to realize that maybe he's not sleeping there anymore, because he'll still be there every day.
Right.
Right? And then, you know, if finances become a problem, because it only goes down by $500 a month if he leaves. You know, the traditional long-term care facilities, they're kind of okay when you're much further along in your illness.
Yeah.
And then you can supplement the bathing by getting a PSW to go in every day and pay like $40 a day for someone to go in.
I always said that.
Bathe her every day.
When my mom, the beginning was the hardest. When she was mobile, it was the hardest.
It's so cruel. Like, yeah. I can't believe that it's, you know, I wish, you know, if you guys, well, here, like, I mean, if folks saw my mom, to think of the services that are offered to someone like her, it would break your heart. It just makes no sense. My mom does not present like she is not well, but she is not well. And there are no services to meet her and other early onsetters' needs. Like, there's none. Unless, you know, you win the lottery and you can afford $5,000 a month.
Yeah.
Which is, and some are $7,000.
So even if you look up programs, let's say online or, you know, for people who are just getting the diagnosis, like, right now or early onset, there's no specific programs being offered for different stages of Alzheimer's?
No.
And on top of that, what happens when you get the diagnosis, it's obviously initial reaction is, because it's not physical, doesn't present, you almost are in disbelief that this person has what they're saying, or that it will progress to
as quickly as it can, yeah.
And so I think a lot of the time is just spent, like,
in denial.
Yeah, and then you just have them at home, and they're not acting different. And some people I even hear, you know, they're still in their house, they're just by themselves, and it's like, you know, well, it's gonna get bad.
Like, and you never know.
Yeah, like Sharon's mother-in-law still lives alone.
That would horrify me.
Yeah, I would be afraid too. To be honest.
And my uncle, so my dad's brother has Alzheimer's, and he was just diagnosed a year ago, and he once was missing for 9 hours. He was going to the bank, got in his car, drove off.
Oh, yeah.
And missing. And I don't even know if they got his car back. Someone sent him home in a taxi. Hours later, like, it was about to go on the 11 o'clock news, and he showed up at 10:45 at his home.
Because there's all these things that have to be put in place, like disconnecting the stove, because they might leave the stove open on.
Yeah, and the hot water has to turn down so they don't get scalded.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of things. Like, you have to Alzheimer, just like a child, right?
Yeah.
I don't understand why we're not understanding that this is a brain neurological disorder. So if you have a brain injury, you can't do the same things as you would as a normal, well, I don't want to say normal, but, you know, person who doesn't have a brain injury, in other words.
Like, we had to, because my mom went missing, she has a tracking bracelet connected to the police department. So if she ever goes missing within a 2 kilometer radius, they can locate her.
I don't know why more people don't have that. Like, they didn't have that elaborate device when my mom, you know,
I don't know why people don't have it. And the reality is, you don't have to just be a person with dementia. It's available to anybody who is vulnerable. So it could even be somebody with...
They should do that for kids.
Well, I think if you have a special needs child...
But why do you have to be special needs?
You can do it. It's just not for folks... It's for any vulnerable person, and any vulnerable person can also be registered, like, with the police department, right? Like, that's all the process. So, you know, when my mom goes missing, or if she was to ever go missing again, it's almost like her mugshot comes up, because it was a picture, and there's, you know, like, her name is Celestine, but she likes to be called Bertie, and it talks about different places where she's lived in Brampton, so places where she may go, and it has her height, and it has my information and my dad's information. And it has some basic information about her overall health. That way, you know, if someone sees her, they at least know how to approach her in a warm, kind, spirited way if she's off wandering, right? So the police would, you know, approach her and know stuff about her to make her feel comfortable.
Right.
But so that's it. That's the support. And like I said, you know, when she goes to her geriatric appointments, which are now once a year because there's nothing they can do, the only thing they offer is insure.
Okay, so let's talk about you and, like, your dad, okay?
Right.
So how many hours would you say approximately per week do you spend informally caregiving?
Well, so my dad's 24 hours nonstop, right? And I try and go by at least once a day for, like, maybe 2 hours.
But even that, still, like, you searching, doing research, you talking.
Oh, well, I can't even, like, think about those things, honestly. But my dad is 24 hours. Like, he gets no break, right? Like, there are times where she's been upset, and, you know, I could hear, like, his frustration, and I hop in my car, and I drive 30 minutes. To see what's going on and to give him a bit of a break. You know, if he wants to go to the bank, if he wants to do anything, he has to make arrangements for somebody to watch my mom. Right? Like, you know, and she doesn't remember anything. He has to administer her medication. He has to provide her her meals, like by bringing the food to her. Otherwise, she won't eat.
So he makes the meals. He cooks?
My dad cooks.
So he's doing
everything.
Like,
he does the laundry.
Unpaid.
Like, he does every single thing. Except for her bathing. My mom still bathes herself. And she can still dress herself. And that is it. That's it.
That's a lot.
It is a lot.
It's a lot.
And, you know, it's a lot. And then sometimes she's paranoid and gets agitated and, you know, yells at the TV because she could think it's real. You know, it's, you know, and then she repeats herself over and over again. Mm-hmm. The other day I was there and she said, oh, I'm going to go down and see Mother. And Mother is a name of endearment that she had for one of her aunts. And she died about 10 years ago. And she lived in St. Lucia, so my mom often thinks she's still in St. Lucia. And, you know, and she's like, I'm going to go downstairs and see Mother. I think she's making food. And I just say, okay,
yeah.
I think you'll see Daddy there.
You have a sibling? You have a sister?
Yeah, my sister can't deal with the disease. She's never been able to deal with the changes, so she doesn't help or participate.
Oh, so she doesn't live at home?
No.
Got it.
Yeah, so it's just my dad and I, really.
Okay.
And it's, you know, it's hard. It really is hard, and it's just, you know, for whoever is listening, for all your listeners, just picture your parents who, you know, and if you don't know, have a parent with Alzheimer's, just think of your parents at the age of 65 and how physically strong they are and they're still independent and, you know, demand to be treated well. And the only support that's available to them is in a facility that's geared to supporting folks with physical challenges, folks who are in chairs, folks who may not be very verbal, and who are more childlike. And that's what's offered to a vibrant, physically vibrant person. It's maddening, to be honest. It's like putting your loved one in jail. you know, for an early onsetter, long-term care is like prison.
Right, and if you don't, it's like the caregiver is being put in jail.
Yeah.
Yes, because your home becomes a prison.
Yeah.
Because you can't leave.
You can't leave.
Like if my dad is going to bring in the garbage containers, you know, he has to have his eye out in case she sneaks out the house.
Okay, so, again, I'm all about finding a solution. What is the solution to this? Is it creating a program for different levels or different stages of Alzheimer's? Is it hiring more people to give the caregiver, like, more relief on a day-to-day basis?
It's accepting that a caregiver is saving the health system billions of dollars. And there should be some sort of
compensation.
Yeah, or something in that subsidizes that time, or like time is money, right? So it's either respite, so you're going to provide that care. Because I always put it down to...
Just to interject, the respite has to meet the early onsetter where they're at. Like, we have to recognize that folks in their 40s and 60s are being diagnosed. And those people can... And they still deserve to be treated well. They deserve to have organized activities with multiple additional staff so they can still participate and enjoy society, right? So they can go for a walk. They can go to a museum. They can do stuff. But to take a vibrant person who just can no longer keep themselves safe and want to stick them in a place where there is nothing for for them to do is cruel. And the only thing it's going to accomplish is it's going to depress them, which is part of the disease, and it's going to sadden them, and it's going to hasten their disease.
Yeah.
Like, it's progressive. If you take away the little joys that somebody has, they're just going to stay inside themselves. And we're going to lose our loved ones faster. And it's just, can you imagine how a spouse would feel to not be able to, to not be able to lovingly care for their loved one anymore, and then have to put them somewhere and see drastic changes in them, and to realize that by trying to make their loved one be safe, that they've now lost their loved one. It's just cruel.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so definitely things that need to be considered and thought of and put into play with this foundation that you are actively creating and getting on, you know, getting on. These are all factors, and I'm sure there's so much more that, you know, other people out there are experiencing and dealing with and are frustrated and overwhelmed with. And these are all things that need to be taken into consideration and
Because what happens is it's so top heavy. So I talk about this all the time. Like, the Alzheimer's societies are all working in silos. They're all fragmented, right? So you can walk into an Alzheimer's society in Toronto. You're not going to get the same service as the one in Brampton,
which is bogus.
Like, right, I said you're demographically challenged,
which is not like, right? That's so not acceptable.
Right. So that's the problem. So already, when you have a diagnosis, it depends on where you live with what services that you're going to get
across the board.
Right. And then the caregiver suffers. Regardless, the caregiver suffers. And
absolutely,
it's about time that, you know, we have a voice. And that, like, the government has to do something about it. We can't just keep saving trillions of dollars, and then it's just like, oh, well, you know, that's nice. Yeah, well.
I think we also have to re-examine, like, our medical model.
Yeah.
Right? If my mom was to move into that facility that we saw this week, her needs would not be met. And that seems to be acceptable.
Right, like it's if it's universal, it's universal.
Yeah, her needs would not be met. Her psychosocial needs, spiritual needs would not be met.
And that's tough too because well, everyone's so different and unique, right?
Well, programming is not designed around a young, vibrant person who just can't keep themselves safe.
But the worst thing is it's like, okay, well, if, what are we saving? Like, there should be a formula. What does a caregiver save? Like, what is your father saving the healthcare system? Okay, well then, I'm sure if you gave him the amount of money, he would hire somebody that your mom could stay in her own home and be safe.
Right.
And then he could, it'll alleviate some of his stress. Right? Like,
well, I still also think that, you know, she's, even if someone is in a care facility, they still deserve to be treated as they are. Right? So when you think about daycare programs for little kids, they, you know, the kids don't just sit there all day and do nothing. They're stimulated all day long.
Yes, they are stimulated. However, you were making mention of, you know, everybody deserves to be treated, you know, with their uniqueness, with whether that be religion or spiritual practices or this and that, you know, and the other, which, you know, that's a whole kind of different topic. But when you're talking about daycare, your child is one of a bunch in a number of a class. So, yes, they are going to be stimulated and they're going to be put into groups and, you know, they're going to be taken care of, but there's very little one-on-one interaction and special care that goes into taking specific care for every single child that's in daycare. It's impossible. It's impossible.
I understand that, but
I just say, Karen, and I'll be quick.
Okay.
But what somebody needs with Alzheimer's or dementia is they need that group socialization.
Right.
But that's what they need.
I just want to interject because it's on the same topic, is that a person, a child with special needs, because we were talking to Monique, and she gets a babysitter that comes in to give her respite.
Extra supports in the
school. We don't have that. Like, it's not even universal healthcare with different disabilities.
Yep.
That's the issue.
Absolutely. Because, yes, if you have a special needs child in a school system, they get an ECE support staff.
Right. Babysitter.
To support your child and to minimize disruptions for the rest of the class. Right? So if my mom participated in this activation program that I saw, there were 10 residents of this care facility. I think 9 were in wheelchairs, and they were in the, I don't know the correct term, but not the wheelchair, you know, they were in the big expensive wheelchairs, let's just say that. So they were in some very nice wheelchairs or the special chairs like you will see in a hospital for someone who spends most of their time in a chair and not in bed. And there was not a lot of, you know, verbal stuff. There wasn't a lot of stuff going on between the participants, right? Because they were further along in their illness. So is that a setting where I would want to be in for my stimulation? No. Like, why would, you know, why would that work for me? Like, I just, you know, there's so many people with early onset. And, you know, maybe the problem is because they're all suffering with their loved ones at home, because to move somebody into one of these places when, you know, how can you tell a vibrant 72-year-old that you can't bathe because you think that they're going to do something to themselves in the shower? Like, clearly you don't understand the disease. You should be grateful that they are still able to do that. Like, that's a nice check mark when you go and you see the gerontologist, oh, she can still bathe. Great. That's wonderful that she can do it. But now if we can't care for her, what we celebrate every year when we see the gerontologist, now you're going to take away. It makes no sense to me. They're so happy that, oh, she still dresses herself. Oh, this, oh, that. She can put on her shoes. Great. But now you're you're going to take away the little independence that she's holding on to and just take it away because our funding model, or because somebody thinks that she's going to harm herself having a shower. Makes no sense.
Okay, well, we have, you brought up some really good points, and as you know, starting a foundation.
Do you have a name for a foundation, Karen?
Yes. It's called the Reinvent and Restore Foundation.
Nice.
So, we'll be setting out a campaign to raise money for it so that caregivers can have the supports that they need. It's much needed. It's, I can't believe someone else hasn't done this already.
Or they've tried maybe and it just didn't.
No, I don't. I think no.
You were probably too tired because of they were caregiving.
Yeah,
that's probably it. Honestly.
Yeah, perhaps.
Now you have to pick your battles, and they probably were just spent.
Yeah, well, we're gonna change that. So.
Absolutely.
Okay, so thank you again for being on and for sharing.
Keep us posted.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
One day I hope to have good news.
Yes. Yeah, for once. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, right. Goodbye, everybody, and I'll continue watching.
Okay. Bye.
Take care. Yes.